Hello and welcome to Fantasy Life Podcast. I'm your host, Ian Hart. It's a great day to be great. It's a great day to go through some big names in the fantasy world and decide if they are overpriced, underpriced, or hell, maybe even just properly priced. So as always here on this Thursday, I guess you listen to our Friday edition of the Fantasy Life Podcast. I am not alone. I am joined by Dwayne The Rock McFarlane and also Chris Allen. Fellas, I'm bringing you down to my neck of the woods here in Columbus, Ohio next weekend. But before then, we're just talking ball, having a good day. So, yeah, Dwayne, how's it hanging?
Have you told Julia that we're going to record live yet at the wedding? We've got a podcast right before you say your vows. Chris and I have to come to the stage. I hope there's a table area or something. We'll have the mics. We'll have producer James ready to roll. We'll get in a little segment because we know you love to grind, Ian. Like, what's it going to be like for you? That's my question. Are you actually going to take real time off? Because I've known you now for four years or so, and I don't think I've ever known you to actually take a true day off.
Actually, like, people won't probably know. I'm not going to be podcasting. I'm going to Thailand for 2 weeks. That's going to be great. But I am grinding team previews right now. We're going to have those being released like every day that I'm technically on vacation. So working a little harder now so I can chill that much more here in a few weeks. Cannot wait for that. But Chris, how's it hanging?
I'm doing well. And like, actually, I'm with Dwayne. I'm actually going to be somewhat surprised. I'll be out in the audience, you know, like watching you and Julie up there. And I'm just going to be checking your Twitter just to make sure you're not going to be like posting like mid vow or something like that, to have some cut ups of like Dontavian Wicks, like you did earlier today, just like throwing shit out there, like while up at the altar. So, but now, man, I'm doing quite well. Like, I'm able to take a break after the draft, chill for a little bit, get a couple of drafts in, see where ADP is at. And I think that works in well for today's topic of conversation, and see if we know where the market's at and if we think we know better than the market. I'm ready to do it.
Obviously, still a ton of time between now and when most people start drafting, but best ball season is firmly in the air. DraftKings released a ton of contests last week, and Underdog was right behind them. Chihuahua, the puppy, all things like that going big. So, Dwayne, I saw you tweeting about it, telling the kids, you know, find something else to do, man. You got some Chihuahuas to max enter.
Well, you know, once you have kids, you guys, you know, Chris can probably identify with this. One day you'll learn, Ian, but like, once they get into video games and it's like, hey, it's time for dinner. Hang on, I'm in the middle of a match. Like, that's the thing that you always hear. I'm in the middle of a match. And what you don't know yet as a parent is they're playing something silly like Minecraft, and there's really not a match. Like, it's endless. You could just, you know, there's no starting point. There's no ending point. And you're like, it's 3 hours later. You know, the dinner's cold. You've already put it all up. And then they come down the stairs, you know, looking for, you know, their food. And you're like, where were you? And that was a really long match. So now that, you know, I've only got so much time to make sure I max these 25 entries. Yeah, that's my response to my kids with everything. Sorry, in the middle of a match.
Yeah.
Drafting teams, and yeah, I think having a good time while doing it. So let's try to make sure that we are drafting the right teams. That's always kind of the goal here in fantasy football land. So again, we're going overpriced, underpriced, or properly priced. Not necessarily for, you know, some of the biggest ADP movers. Dwayne and Marcus did a great job, you know, addressing that topic on the more recent episode of this podcast. More so, just want to talk about some guys who, for one reason or another, I think are kind of interesting. So why the hell not? Let's get after it, guys. First up, overpriced, underpriced, or properly priced 49ers quarterback Brock Purdy, currently going off the board at Underdog Fantasy as the QB12, pick 104. So, Dwayne, you know, we've now got a year and a half of evidence of Purdy being one of the more efficient quarterbacks in football, actually the most efficient quarterback in NFL history, for crying out loud, in terms of yards per attempt at 9.2, minimum of 500 pass attempts. So certainly his life has been made easier for him than most. Kyle Shanahan drawing up great plays, George Kittle, Debo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, Christian McCaffrey, always a good avenue to go with the football. But hey, man, doesn't really seem like that's exactly changing. And it is surprising to see Purdy really, you know, drop down a tier versus some fellow pocket passers who are also in good offenses. But again, this is the reigning QB7 in fantasy points per game. So how are you feeling about Purdy at this cost, Dwayne?
Yeah, I like Purdy at the cost, but I get where people are coming from. Like, so I've got him ranked as my QB11 right now, but I think there is a tier there, Ian. So we're talking about Jordan Love, Kyler Murray, Dak Prescott. I've got him in the same tier as those guys. But I think you could argue, like, does Tua really also belong in that tier? And if you wanted to make an argument against Purdy, yes, even in my projections, obviously we take him down. Last year, he threw a touchdown on 7% of his attempts. Like, if you guys know, you study the data, that's a really high number. Like, 5% is really good. The NFL average is 4.4%. But when you look around him, you're like, you got Debo, who can smash the zone stuff. You got Ayuk, who can beat all the backside man coverage. We hadn't even talked about George Kittle being a mismatch pretty much against any human that wants to play linebacker or safety. And then now we've got Christian McCaffrey, who is an absolute nightmare as well out of the backfield. Put him in the slot. Oh, they add Ricky Pearsall at the end of the first round. Jacob Cowing, another guy that the supermodel likes. So it's like now, even if they suffer an injury, Ricky Pearsall steps onto the field. And while the supermodel may not be nuts about him, he's an upgrade, right? And so I don't know. I found it hard to push Brock Purdy down. I think the biggest argument you can make, right, is that there's bigger touchdown regression than what we're talking about here. Even though the Fantasy Life projection model pushed him down, he's still projected as the QB 11. That's the rank I've got him in. That's the tier where he's at. If you wanted to point to, you know, a situation where he maybe doesn't quite finish where people think, like, I think it's Tua last year. We saw the same thing with him. He had Tyreek Hill. He had Jalen Waddle. Everybody's like, oh my God, how can you ever push him down, you know, your ranks? And he did come down a little bit. Like last season, 5.2% touchdowns per attempt. So that's the kind of thing that could happen. But even then, like, it's hard to imagine a finish that's like outside of the top 14, right? And there could be a finish that goes as high as like, you know, top six. So I think that there's plenty to like with Purdy. Like, do I want to hang my hat on Purdy in every draft? No, but I'm very fine with him as my QB1. And in best ball, the thing we love about him is, man, you can, there's so many ways to stack him. Like, I mean, you can easily get two 49ers that you like Kittle. It could be CMC, Ayuk, Debo. You can come back for the other guys. We mentioned Pearsall later in drafts. So I think the stackability of him probably does have a little bit to do with where his ADP is. It might be slightly lower than that if the team wasn't so loaded, but I don't think it would be much further away.
Like Dwayne, I do have Purdy as my QB 11 right now. Matthew Friedman on the same wavelength. Usually don't see all three of us rankers with the same positional rank, but here we are. So make sure you guys check out those. Always free and, you know, usually pretty damn updated ranks over on fantasylife.com/tools/NFL-rankings. So I tend to lean with you, Dwayne, where I do think he's pretty properly priced here. Part of me wanted to say he's almost underpriced relative to CJ Stroud and Joe Burrow. But again, after just digging into a little more, I think it's more so those guys. Maybe a bit overpriced right now. Purdy probably sitting
bigger risk again, though, right? I think of those of the 49ers just going run heavy, right? Because they still do that, even though they have all these weapons. They're very willing. They get the right game script or a team can't stop them, you know, in the run game. And there are certain games where, man, you've got to lean super heavily on Brock Purdy's efficiency. And that's where the touchdowns per attempt and yards, like last year, I mean, dude, yards per attempt are just freaking astronomical. So like, I mean, again, I brought all that stuff down in the model, but I think that's where the additional risk for him comes from is you could still get these run heavy game scripts.
Chris, how would you compare Purdy versus the guy that we have right next to him, one spot ahead in the ranks, Dak Prescott? Certainly coming off of a fantastic season, but my God, man, as I was just going through the Cowboys team preview, I think it's concerning that the Cowboys are going to have two first-time starters on the offensive line, that they did absolutely nothing to replace Tony Pollard or Michael Gallup in the skill position room, which, you know, you can say the 2022 group wasn't all that great either, but it's certainly not a plus for this Cowboys offense right now. And as much as I do think Dak and Mike McCarthy will throw the ball a little bit more than what Purdy's going to see in San Fran, I mean, Dak versus Purdy, Chris, I feel like it's a closer topic than necessarily, you know, we're giving it credit for right now.
Yeah, and like after you post it, that's what kind of leads me to think that Purdy might be somewhat underpriced. And to what Dwayne was speaking about earlier, it's almost like the stackability that comes with a guy like Purdy, where that might be a little bit more appeasing to fantasy drafters because it might be easier to pick up some of the 49ers as compared to, I don't know how many folks are going to go out wanting to stack Dak Prescott with Jalen Tolbert, or that are going to try and take another swing at like Brandon Cooks at his age. So it's like the offensive efficiency, I think, is comparable between the two squads. The passing rates, like while the Cowboys are probably going to be more like pass heavy as compared to the 49ers, to what Dwayne was talking about earlier, Brock Purdy last year, just in like raw attempts per game, Brock Purdy was like 28th compared to most passers, like minimum 300 dropbacks. So it's like if we're thinking about the 49ers offense being more reliant on the efficiency, more reliant on the downfield pass attempts to Ayuk, Kittle, Samuel, CMC, like insert 49ers player here. Whereas with Dak, we're going to get that volume. We're going to get those 10 plus target games to CeeDee Lamb. We're going to get those 6, 7, 8 targets to Jake Ferguson, maybe even sprinkle in some Zeke and so on and so forth. So it's like, I can see the case for Brock Purdy being ranked like somewhat over those guys, but I would say the only thing that gives me some pause is the highest of highs. And I'm just thinking about this like qualitatively, like dig into the numbers like afterwards, but I think like qualitatively, the highest of highs I can see like Dak Prescott having the higher ceiling, because we did see some of those like peak ceiling games like for Dak and CeeDee Lamb, especially like going down the stretch of the towards the end of the fantasy, the regular season for fantasy. And whereas the same might be the like in the same thing for, like I was mentioning, like CeeDee Lamb, like Jake Ferguson having bigger games, whereas the consistency aspect, which I'm not the biggest believer in, like week to week consistency, and that's more in the noise than anything else. But I think for a fantasy drafter, they might think, oh, it's just more, I can get more consistency out of a guy like Brock Purdy. I'm putting myself in the mindset of somebody drafting them. So that's where like I'm leaning towards Brock Purdy just being more underpriced. I can see right now at QB 11, QB 12, he can fall into that QB 7, QB 8, QB 9 range, like towards the back end of the season, because there is some uncertainty with the guys that are sitting above him. Like, can Dak Prescott sustain that level of productivity with just having CeeDee Lamb as the primary guy like this year? Can Jordan Love like maintain like the level of production and efficiency he was having with the pass catchers he was using? Kyler Murray having a full season, Joe Burrow actually not being injured, Anthony Richardson having a full, I mean, all those guys that folks are drafting ahead of him on underdog, you can kind of poke just a little bit, like just here and there with like certain aspects of their game, where it's like with Brock Purdy, he's still in the same offense, still has the high efficiency, highly efficient play caller, still has like all of his weapons intact, so we don't have any sort of concern about the about the surrounding cast. And so like outside of the lack of attempts and a lack of rushing, like which we know is kind of inherent to a Shanahan offense, to me it's like I'll take Brock Purdy at his cost, assuming that the ceiling is going to be there.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to call the guy a system quarterback, which I really think at this point has been debunked, but go ahead and call him that. But you also should probably mention it's the best system in the NFL, so it actually ends up working out pretty well, you know, when we are just trying to get some raw production here in fantasy land. So, Dwayne, I know you've been in the lab for freaking weeks to months on these projections. They're finally live on fantasylife.com.
A lifetime.
We appreciate your hard work. But, yeah, man, it's just surprising. I mean, Purdy right there sitting pretty as the QB6 in projections. Difference between projections and fantasy football ranks, I get it, but one spot behind Dak Prescott. And I think one important note, again, not trying to comp him to Josh Allen or Jalen Hurts, Lamar Richardson, these guys that we know have the dual threat ability, but even though Purdy pissed me off, didn't give me that extra one rush attempt I was hoping for on my Super Bowl prop, he can go out there and just scoot in for a couple touchdowns, and really his just raw rushing projection isn't all that dissimilar from guys like Dak going into year 31, Joe Burrow and CJ Stroud, and et cetera. So yeah, again, tend to think properly priced. I'm leaning more so if I had to go underpriced versus overpriced on Chris's side with underpriced. And yeah, pretty nice opportunity there again, going outside the top 100 picks currently on underdog. So gotta appreciate that. Go ahead.
Before we move on to the next one. So like, let's say if it was on the flip side of this, and like instead of him being QB 11, let's say he was more towards like price right now, like QB 7, QB 8. Would you guys be out at that point and say that he's overpriced, or would you still be like, I kind of think he's properly priced like somewhere in there? Like, what would you guys think about that?
The tier I have him in says he could go to 7 or 8. So I think That's the range where it's fine. And if you're in an underdog draft where, you know, or, you know, DraftKings draft, and let's say you've landed Ayuk and Debo, at that point, like, I would be more willing to reach around on Brock Purdy than take Dak. Like, so, I mean, some of it does come down to like how you construct your roster. You know, the best way to do that is let it go and hope, because no one else has any of the 49ers pieces, you get Brock Purdy to fall back to you and you get to build this monster team and still pocket that other pick. Yeah. But I think once you get to that point, I think it's fine. Like, when I create tiers, I create them with the mindset of, look, guys, these are all really close. It's up to you. Like, you really do get to make the choice here the way these guys grade out.
And I will say, in terms of, you know, reaching on your quarterback to complete that stack, if you have, what would you say, Dwayne, like 10 to 12 picks, that's probably the most I'd be willing to. Again, you have a stranglehold on the offense. You're hoping no one's going to snipe the quarterback when they don't have a stack set up. 10 to 12 picks, okay. I think I'm fine letting that, you know, run, hoping that they fall that much past ADP. Anything after that, probably just go ahead and draft a guy.
Yeah, the further you go in the draft, obviously, the more that changes. So, like, if you're sitting in round 15 and you've got Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua, and you know Stafford's supposed to make it to 16, I don't care. I'm just reaching. Like, reaching 12 spots in that round or 15 spots in that round is nothing. It's absolutely nothing. Now, if you're trying, if you're doing that, and I'm trying to think, there's not that many combos that would force you to do that early this year. Jalen Hurts would be probably the best one. You take AJ, and you can make that stack, and I love it. You can take AJ Brown at the end of round one. Sometimes you get Devonta Smith to come back to you at the end of round three. You turn around, you take Jalen Hurts there in the fourth round. But where I was going with it is, if it's an earlier pick like that, I think it's what you just said, Ian. I don't want to reach probably more than like six or eight spots, you know, preferably. Now, it depends on where you're drafting. You're drafting on the ends, you're like six or eight spots, like that's not even an option. Like, it's going to be 20 right. picks before I go again. So you kind of got to keep all those things in mind. But the earlier in the draft, the less willing I am to reach. The further along it goes, the much more willing I am. That I think completing your stack is actually worth more, especially if you've got a double stack set up. I think it's worth more than probably taking the player you might be looking at ADP. Obviously, there's a lot of factors. What if you're staring at a player that's fallen 20 picks past ADP that you could take, or you take your quarterback stack? Well, then I take the guy that's fallen 20 picks that I'm not normally going to get. So
time to pivot.
There's a lot of factors, but overall, like, just generally speaking, like, as the draft goes, the more willing, you know, that I am to reach for my players.
And I'm sorry, is there like another feeling, another greater feeling in a draft when you see somebody creating a stack and you go and take the quarterback that messes up their stack? Like, I can see some of that, like, because I know it happens to me enough that, like, it's like one of the worst feelings in the world when you think you have this, like, just well laid out plan, and then somebody just winds up completely ruining it by taking the player that you expect to have to finish off that stack. But on the flip side, it just feels so good when you see, like, oh, you drafted DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. Oh, I'm Geno Smith. I'm just going to take him like right now. Like, I'm going to mess this up for you.
What's
like,
funny is they mess up their own team as well. Yeah. if you really want a chance at winning the big money down the stretch, they're most likely hurting their own team. But yes, I see it happen all the time. And I think it happened to me like four times yesterday. On ones that shouldn't be hard to complete too. Sometimes you're trying to thread a needle and you just tell yourself, you're like, look, if this goes wrong, whatever, I'm giving it a shot, but I'm not going to be mad. Then there's other ones where you're like, oh man, I'm taking this and this. I can actually wait. I've seen this work out so many times for these other drafters. No, not the one time you try it. It doesn't work.
Right. Yeah.
Chris, do you actively monitor what other teams are doing as you're drafting? I personally just stick to my squad. You know, winners focus on winning, losers focus on winners type of mindset there. I don't know. I just feel like if you're trying to take out someone else, like, you're just kind of getting distracted, man. Keep your eye on the ball.
I do, just to see that it helps me prepare. Like, if I see stacks forming, then it helps me to try and prepare whether or not somebody would potentially reach on a quarterback or not. So at least it gives me like some sort of tell as to, like, because like to the example Dwayne like put out earlier, it's like you see somebody draft AJ Brown. Like, if even I'm thinking about, or like think I might be in the, like, in the potential to get Jalen Hurts, depending on where I'm drafting at, it's like, all right, well, now I have to like try and figure out, okay, is that a potential for me? Like, what my plan B might be, or something like that. Or if you see double stacks for me, you can almost instantly see like that start to happen. So yeah, I do pay attention for that. Not to say that that's going to be what I'm going to do, or like I'm going into draft saying I'm going to ruin somebody's stack, but I do try and pay attention to that. Just
that's
to
just give, a side bonus.
Yeah. It's definitely a side quest for me. It's like, if I can ruin somebody's stack and like what somebody drafts like Cooper Kupp or Puka Nacua, I'll be like, no, I'm going to get Stafford and DeMarcus Robinson later and just like just delayed.
I shouldn't say I completely ignore it. I know, Dwayne, we've had some success over the past few years doing some FFPC drafts, or, you know, whoever it happens to be, where it's like, okay, we need a quarterback. And you look, and the next 10 teams all have quarterbacks. Yeah. Yes, I'm more willing to wait for that. But yeah, specifically,
I'm always looking at other players, especially when you're picking towards the turns. I'm always looking to see what's on their roster and what they need, not to spoil their stack, but more trying to figure out, okay, I've got four players, you know, I've got five players that I want here. One of them's a running back, four of them are wide receiver. I look at their teams to see, okay, well, now suddenly I see they need receivers and they've already each got three running backs. I might be like, well, I know there's only one running back in my tier left, but I think they're taking receivers with all their picks. So I'm going to go ahead and take the receiver that I want. You know, it doesn't always work out, but you're just trying to play whatever little edge you can. So I'm always looking at it, more so though, the closer I am to the turn.
Yeah.
All right, gents, let's get back on track. But good discourse there, if I do say so myself. Another quarterback going well outside the top 100 picks at this point. Justin Herbert, QB 17, pick 122. Wasn't that long ago that he was, you know, still very much a top 12 signal caller. Just continues to free fall as everyone gets afraid of what is probably going to be a run-heavy Jim Harbaugh offense. Yes, we like Ladd McConkey. Yes, one of us here likes Hayden Hurst. But I think we can all agree, not exactly the best, you know, pass-catching corpse in the entire NFL. So, you know, guys, I looked at this and I thought, okay, QB 17, that seems pretty properly priced. But the next three quarterbacks going after him, Kirk Cousins, Matthew Stafford, Aaron Rodgers, yes, they're older. Also, yes, they're probably going to have more pass game volume, and we would certainly take those supporting casts over what the Chargers are working with right now. Even Baker Mayfield and Deshaun Watson, the next two quarterbacks after that, I do think there's a world where Justin Herbert could be outscored by all five of those guys, not because he's a bad signal caller, but because of volume and because he just sadly doesn't have that many great avenues to go with the football right now. So, Chris, for you, Justin Herbert, QB 17. Again, I don't think I'd be surprised if any of us think he's exactly, you know, overly underpriced, but could you see Herbert somehow having a QB ADP, you know, starting with a two here before too long? Meaning he's in the 20s, not 200s, but you know.
Well, right, yeah, I know what you're saying. I could see it because directly to the point that you're talking about, before you even get into any stats or like just generally like just vibes, just look at the guys that are going around him. Like would I want Kirk Cousins with Drake London and Kyle Pitts and Bijan Robinson and this like more like similarly tempoed offense, like with getting a guy off of the Shanahan tree or the Sean McVay tree rather. It's like, oh, like, all of that stuff kind of fits. And the same thing for Rodgers. Like, we got at least some confidence in the skill players around him. And then we've already seen like what Matthew Stafford can do with Puka Nacua, a healthy Cooper Kupp, and so on and so forth. It's like, the guys going after him, I would say qualitatively have better situations. So why not take shots on them? We're already looking at the pass catchers for most of those guys. Like Garrett Wilson going in the first round. Puka Nacua, we already see what his ADP is. I think the market's already telling us what we think about the quarterbacks relative to the pass catchers that they're connected to. And then after that, getting into the stats, Dwayne will probably, hit all of this, but looking at what JJ McCarthy was doing, like when he was with like Jim Harbaugh, like last season, I mean, pass rates were relatively low. We know what Greg Roman, what his tendencies are like when Roman is in charge. So I can't see a way for this to be, for him to skyrocket in ADP. I mean, Ladd McConkey, okay, cool. We're hyped about him. The DJ Chark, the guy I was using as an example last year for like, you know, for propping up Hayden Hurst, like now also like with him as well. So it's like all these guys that we're connecting around Justin Herbert would never be guys that you want to like actively draft. So outside of the stacking options being relatively cheap, I just don't see a path for us to say that Herbert is going to be a riser in ADP. So it might get to the point where he's underpriced, but for right now, the guys going around him, I would say that he is like somewhat overpriced, to be quite honest.
Dwayne, in your projections, you have Deshaun Watson, Jared Goff, Herbert, Rodgers, and Matthew Stafford all within 11 points of each other. And again, I think once you actually start grinding through this, the difference in efficiency versus volume and what they bring to the table as a rusher, I think it makes sense, man, where it's tough to be overly confident that any one of these guys are going to, you know, manage to totally outscore the other group. So Justin Herbert for you, Dwayne, someone where, hey, QB 17 feels wrong, but I don't know, starting to look pretty right.
I mean, honestly, we're giving him respect of just being a really good young quarterback with him even landing there. I mean, look, as much as we love Ladd McConkey and we love to talk about him, he may not do anything as a rookie, right? I mean, that does happen.
When's the last time a highly drafted wide receiver did nothing for the Chargers?
Exactly. You don't have to look very far, and we can look at this team. Yeah, I mean, Josh Palmer, you know, not a high-end target earner. So, I mean, look, like just looking at the offense plus the MO for Harbaugh, like I think it's really hard to see a scenario where the big question I like to ask myself with these guys, especially as you start to push them down a board, is what's the scenario where you just really regret it? And you're like, oh my God, I didn't draft Justin Herbert and I just lost my fantasy league. I can't get there. I can't find a way to get there. So when I think about it that way, I'm like, oh, look, it's fine. He could end up having a great season and finish as the QB 11. And I still don't, it still doesn't lose me my fantasy league. Right? Because here's what I'm going to tell you. He does not have top three upside. Like, it's not in the cards, not with this team and with everything going against him. And if it happened, I'd be willing to just die on that sword, right? It's like, okay, great. You just went out of your way and somehow had the most ridiculous season that we could have never forecasted. And that kind of thing does happen from time to time. But that would be the kind of scenario that would have to play out. It'd have to be one of those one percenters, like, to use an analogy, you know, for you guys. I know you've been playing poker, but it's like the one outer on the river, right? There's one card that can save your opponent on the river. Sure enough, here it comes. Probabilities, you know, as much as we like to play them, there's always the odds, right, that the low percentage thing could hit. But that's the kind of thing we're looking at with Justin Herbert. It's a one outer on the river. I'm just not going to worry about it. I'm just going to play my cards the way I would normally play them. And that's not worrying about Justin Herbert. And really the only way that I try to get exposure to him is if I happen to draft Ladd McConkey, right? And then I'll turn around and get, you know, Palmer and Herbert. I might do a little bit of something like that, you know, and I, you know, I guess I'll have to start closing it out with Hayden Hurst or Will Disley. But when I look at Herbert, the other thing is, like, it's just hard to get excited about any kind of multiple stacks, like, in this offense. So mostly if I do it, I'm probably only going with one of those guys. And it's probably going to be when I draft Ladd McConkey.
Herbert, 4 years in the league at this point. He's finished as the QB7, QB2, and then QB15 and QB10 over these last 2 years. So had the rib issue, you know, in that season 3. Obviously last year, not getting much help with, you know, his wide receivers, not named Keenan Allen. Yeah, again, QB17 feels very low for someone that I think we'd all agree is a locked in top 10, if not top 5, real life quarterback. But not playing real life football. We are playing fantasy. Going to be tough for Herbert to make a major difference this year. Again, due to mostly the aforementioned volume and offensive environment concerns. Move on to running backs, fellas. Now, this man was on the verge of breaking fantasy football last year. Still had a great season, but, you know, ill-timed mid-season injury didn't exactly set him up for success. Still had some good weeks down the stretch. And, of course, I'm talking about rising second-year Dolphins running back Devon Achane. Currently going off the board, though, RB8, pick 21.9. So it is going to cost you kind of a back half of the second-round pick. And in redraft leagues where you don't have wide receivers flying off the board as fast, underdog, hell, this man could even be on that round one borderline. So Dwayne, Achane is one of these guys where you look at the pure volume projections and it's like, no, this guy isn't an RB1. But then you look at what he can actually do when he does boom during any given week. And the fact that, oh, I don't know, he averaged 7.8 yards per carry in the NFL with over 100 carries. I mean, if there was going to be someone to continue to make the most out of their opportunities, certainly seems like that would be Achane. But my God, is this round two cost just a bit too high for your taste, Dwayne?
Well, I mean, it started off as being an early round two pick, and now he's sliding towards the end of round two, and I see him go in round three quite often in drafts. So I'm trying to get my exposure now. But to your point, Ian, like he projects as the running back 13. I've got him graded out as my running back 7. He's going at running back 8 in ADP, right? So, I mean, he's just one of these guys that, to your point, like once you see it, you can't unsee it. You can't unsee what Achane did. And had he not gotten hurt last year, he would have absolutely terrorized every freaking league where whoever got him in round 10, 11, or 12, he was so good. They would have just smoked the whole league with just Achane. That's without even looking at the rest of the roster. Like, that's how good this player is. And we've got Mostert, who's an older player. I know we added Jalen Wright, who's a guy that's also, he's perfectly fits like the Mike McDaniel mold, right? This explosive running back that tested really well, fast 40, all those sort of things. You know, he's a little bit of a heavier back, so he could be involved as well. But man, the problem with passing on Achane is the upside, and the upside is just what matters so much. So last year in games with Mostert, 19.8 fantasy points per game. In those games, he had 40% of the attempts, 52% route participation. He had a 14% target share, 25% targets per route run. So this is a guy that they just want to get involved every way possible. Even though he's not getting all the snaps when he's out there, they're targeting him in the pass game. And just knowing Mike McDaniel, like, and what he likes to do with his playmakers, I don't see it changing. And like, if I had to pick, I would say they expand Achane's role before they're going to shrink it. Right. So, I mean, I think, and it's hard to overly project that, to your point. And I found myself having a really hard time projecting Achane for too much more just because, let's be honest, Mostert was really good last year. I mean, Mostert was 17.2 fantasy points per game in the games with Achane. So I like both of these guys right now, but I'm still willing to spend the pick in round two on Achan just because of the upside. But I get why people could feel a little bit, you know, nervous about it, because it is tough to project him to get there. Like I mentioned, in our projections, he comes out as RB 13 points per game.
But this is the poster child for, could you see things going horribly wrong for your fantasy team if you never draft this guy? So yeah, I'm with you where, again, probably I would say lean overpriced, but at the same time, I do not want to be all the way out on this dude at all. Anytime you see him in round three sliding past ADP, happily jumping on that. And I'm with you. I think we could see the role expand as well. Chris, Achan, and Mostert, they were basically healthy together for eight games last year, and it was almost right down the middle. The snaps, it was 239 for Achan, 236 for Mostert. Achan had 117 carries and targets, Mostert 116. So maybe Jalen Wright could, you know, squeeze his way into that committee, but I don't know, man. I could also see Jeff Wilson or Salvin Ahmed just being, you know, the number three on this team, because yeah, it's probably still just going to be this two running back committee. So thoughts on Achan and even Mostert for that matter, Chris, because Lord knows when this Dolphins offense is clicking, they sure do know how to put up points on that scoreboard in a hurry.
Yeah, and I think part of that, and then also what Dwayne was talking about, I think is what drafters need to keep in mind when either deciding whether Achan is overpriced or underpriced. And I think I fall into the camp of he's properly priced, because I cannot confidently say that he is overpriced, because to what Dwayne was saying earlier, it's like, what do you win? Like if he winds up hitting, and he could be the guy that we saw for flashes throughout the 2023 season, where he is getting that, like the rushing share, he is getting part of the target share as well. And what is a, at least during the regular season, they fell off once they got into the playoffs, but during the regular season is one of the more explosive, one of the more like highly efficient offenses in the league. And those are the situations we would typically want to target, like when it comes to the guys that are going to be drafted within like the top 10 for running backs. So if we already know that Achan has the talent and he is in the right situation, then yes, that would typically fall into the archetype of running back that we would want to target here with that type of a pick. But I cannot confidently say that he's underpriced at the same time, because you are spending like it's such a high round pick where it's just like, I fall into that camp of, I think he's properly priced, whether or not whomever winds up working behind him.
Let me ask you guys this. If you knew Devin Achan, because this is a possibility, it could happen. Mm-hmm. We could be doing the recap show Sunday night and we're talking about, you know, snap shares, attempt shares, all that. If Achan comes out in week one and he gets 62% of the Dolphins rushing attempts, and it's just like a normal game script, and it's like all throughout, and Mostert's just relieving him, is there like someone you would be more afraid of missing on in round two? Like there wouldn't be a better pick than Achan in round two if that happens.
There wouldn't be, because like I think going back over the last five seasons, since he's being drafted around the RB7, RB8, the RB8 over the last like five seasons has been Derrick Henry, Tony Pollard, Alvin Kamara, Josh Jacobs, and Nick Chubb. Three of those five have averaged around like 55-60% of the team's rushing snaps. So it's like if Achan comes out and he does that, then that's
it. He's going to be the running back one.
Yeah. Like it's a wrap. Period. After that. Yeah. Like that, like, there's no way. Like I would say that there's no way.
I shouldn't say period. It's CMC, but he would challenge.
Probably.
Yeah. CMC, Bijan, and Breece. After that, I think you can make the argument that Achan could be as high as RB4 if you want to lean into that upside.
Yeah. And I think that's,
he got 60% of the carries. He would be in the group with them. Mm-hmm. He would be challenging. He would be in the race with those guys to be the RB1 overall.
And that's the bet. Like, what do you win if he winds up hitting? And that is the upside case for him. So that's where I would lean that.
So flip side though, Chris, I want, what is your floor on him? Cause see, my thing is like, you know, when you're thinking about, like, I love the way you put it. Like, you know, you're like, you know, you can't confidently say that, you know, he's underpriced or overpriced. So he's probably about right.
Yeah.
But like, even if he's in this small role where he only gets 40% of the work, like, even if his efficiency goes down, I feel like he's got so much room to give. Even if the efficiency comes down quite a bit, mm-hmm. he could still honestly not kill you and run, you know, at the end of round two, given like some of the other guys going around him. Like, I still feel like, are we really sure that Malik Nabers can outscore him, you know, even in a full-time role, if Achan's getting 45%, you know, of the carries? Like, I don't know. That's probably still a close race.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the running backs that go behind him, and it's like, I wouldn't want to take. So let's see, like the bets that you would have to make, guys going behind him. So Derrick Henry at his age, like in Baltimore, which is okay. Josh Jacobs with the Packers, and then Travis Etienne. Like those are the three guys going behind him. It's like, I don't see the same upside with any of those three. Maybe Henry, maybe. But outside of
that, even then with Henry, you don't get it just because you know he's not going to get all the passing game work, which is really the skeleton key to an astronomical running back season.
Right. And none of those other guys have that compared to Achane.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think that's the passing down work is almost what separates Achane from guys like Saquon Barkley and Jonathan Taylor. Not that they can't do that, but in those offenses with Hurts and Richardson, usually scrambling instead of checking down, I think Achane's booms are going to be higher than what those guys can really attest to having. So he had, meaning Achane, games last year with 22, 21, and 19 combined carries and targets. I mean, it adds up in a hurry. And Dwayne, I know there was a stretch there where I think it was Waddle was banged up, and it was almost like McDaniel was just like, okay, you know, those quick hitting kind of plays that we get to our wide receivers, we're going to start giving Achane and Mostert some opportunities with that. So really, it's arguably one of those situations like the 49ers where our base projection for Achane and stuff is great, but God forbid one of these other weapons gets injured, all of a sudden we have a whole new ceiling. So I think I just talked myself into one to draft a lot more Devin Achane, boys.
I think I'm kind of at that point too. All right, last thing I'll ask then. Does the Odell Beckham signing change anything about what your thoughts on for Achane regarding the potential targets for him?
No, none.
No, but okay. I'm tired of people getting annoyed at the Odell Beckham Jr. signing. Who out there is expecting OBJ to start partying like it's 2014 again? He's a number three wide receiver. It's fine.
I mean, his last three teams wound up at least making like long playoff runs and or going to the Super Bowl. So, I mean, the man's doing something right. I mean, whether it could just be
he knows how to pick the right team to join.
That's true. Well, he's getting the bag wherever he goes.
LA and Miami, baby.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I swear to God, though, if people keep going out there and just referencing his 100-yard tallies and then not including the freaking NFC Championship one, grinds my gears, guys. But you know what doesn't grind my gears? Playoff basketball and even hockey. My God, our producer James Lynch was at that Canucks comeback last night. What a time to be alive. And guess what? Really, just overall, guys, the first few weeks of the playoffs have been on fire and is not slowing down anytime soon. Now is the perfect time to get some skin in on the game with our partners over at DraftKings Sportsbook. Right now, all new customers who bet just $5 on anything will instantly receive $150 in bonus bets. I will be using, you know, my $5 and probably more than that on my Cleveland Cavaliers, hopefully evening things up against the Boston Celtics tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern, but probably not, though, because Boston is apparently really good at basketball, and I'm just a Cleveland diehard. That said, don't wait. Download the DraftKings app now and sign up using our promo code QUESTIONS. The crown is yours, and go Cavs. All right, guys, let's talk one more running back here. And by one more, I mean two more. But first up, new Bears RB1, DeAndre Swift, currently going off the board as the RB22, pick 84.4. So, Dwayne, I know we had an extended kind of conversation last year about Swift, and you got really proven right, I would say, the first half of the season, and then some of my concerns started to come to fruition during the second half. So ended up being a perfectly fine value at where he was going, and we did see, again, the upside there. Now, though, he's really being priced the same kind of way he was last year, but I would argue he's in an offense where we don't have to worry as much about a Kenneth Gainwell type of character actually coming in and being the starter, which he was for week one, to be fair, before he suffered that injury. And two, I don't think we have as much of a problem with the dual threat QB, not to suggest that Caleb Williams won't be running around, and I don't think he's going to make a habit of checking things down, but also don't think he's going to lead the league in touchdowns from the 1 yard line. So, for you, Dwayne, DeAndre Swift, really sitting there again, RB22, pick 84. If you are going to go out there and have this kind of zero RB, hero RB mindset, sure seems like Swift might be someone to, you know, go after in those middle rounds. Or how are you feeling if not?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, because he checks all the boxes we want, right? He's an explosive playmaker. He's a high-end target earner out of the backfield. Last year, obviously, with the Eagles, that got him. He had a 17% targets per route run. But when you've got A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith and Dallas Goedert and a quarterback that wants to run, like, that can happen to you. So it's really a matter of, like, how much is Caleb Williams really going to want to run? He was a decent part of the USC and Oklahoma games as far as design rushing attempts. But, like, his scramble rate was 6.2%, which is right around, like, the average for college quarterbacks. So I don't know that Caleb's going to really be scrambling all that much. I don't think it'll be in that 10, 11, 12% range where it really becomes problematic for running backs. But targets per route run in the three seasons before that, Ian, 27%, 24%, and 25%. This is a high-end receiving running back. And so I think really what it comes down to is how big of a factor is Khalil Herbert and Roschon Johnson? What is that going to look like? And so I think we're going to have to really try it as much as we can. Read the tea leaves through training camp, preseason utilization, and those things are not foolproof by any means whatsoever. But we haven't heard a lot, so we don't know exactly how this is going to work. I think we all agree that DeAndre Swift is the 1A back here. But is it going to be, okay, 1A means you get 50% of the work, and then we're going to split up the other duties between the other two guys? Or do we really have a shot at like a guy that could be out there 60 to 65% of the time? And I think that's within his range of outcomes, like because he can play all the different downs. And if they suddenly just decide, no, we're going with Swift, he's drastically underpriced. Like he could easily give you a top 12 running back season, not having to worry about Jalen Hurts stealing those carries inside the 5 yard line. That might be the biggest thing, right? It's just the fact that, you know, Caleb Williams did score a lot of rushing touchdowns as well. He was used a lot in the design run game in college. But we all know no one's going to be close to what Jalen Hurts gets, right? It's not going to be every time you get inside, you know, basically the 2 or 3 yard line is guaranteed to go to Jalen Hurts. Like, Caleb Williams is going to steal some touchdowns, but he's not going to score, you know, 10 to 15 per year like what we're getting from Jalen Hurts. So, yeah, and if the Bears offense is clicking, what's funny is, like, people love all the Bears. People are taking all the Bears probably slightly higher than where they project for all the wide receivers, also for Caleb Williams. The one guy that's kind of getting left out from an ADP standpoint with how much everybody's on with the Bears is DeAndre Swift. So, yeah, I think that he's slightly underpriced, actually, from where he should be, but it's not, like, outrageous. Like, I wouldn't move him up to, like, round 4 or 5, but I think he could finish as well as an Isaiah Pacheco. I think he could finish as well as a Rashad White. Like, if this guy gets a full-time role, I think he'll be worth more than Rashad White. It's just a matter of we don't know for sure what the role is going to be, and that uncertainty is pushing him down draft boards, which typically is a good recipe to attack, especially when you have a guy that has shown historically that he can play all the downs, especially those sweet passing downs.
It seems like a nice combo here where even if we don't get the full workhorse role, I mean, okay, he's going off the board as a low-end RB2. I kind of expect him to still probably project for similar numbers, even if we do see more Khalil Herbert or Roschon than we're expecting. But Chris, I mean, I would like to think the Bears just gave this dude $14 million guaranteed for a reason, and that reason presumably is to be their bell cow back. So don't underestimate that money. I mean, that's the seventh highest mark of any running back, and I mean, it's actually, I think, fifth among second contract guys because we have Bijan and Gibbs, you know, getting that first-round boost there. But Mixon, Josh Jacobs, Tony Pollard, Derrick Henry, they did not get that much guaranteed money in free agency, Chris. So I think we need that workhorse role because if you just look at the expected fantasy points per game out of every backfield over these last 2 years, the two least fantasy friendly offenses were the Bears, which, yeah, that's where we are now, and the Seahawks, which is where we have Shane Waldron coming from and now run the Bears offense. Again, I think some of that has to do with Justin Fields and Geno and then Russ and everything going on with how they were playing the position. Not all that dissimilar from Caleb Williams, but, you know, Chris, kind of going what we were, you know, what Dwayne brought up with Achane. If we do get done with week one and we're looking back and all of a sudden DeAndre Swift is playing 75% of the snaps with 60% of the rushes and dominating pass down work, to me, this is a guy where we're going to have him as a low-end RB2, but it could literally be one data point away from saying, oh yeah, DeAndre Swift, top 10 fantasy running back.
Yeah, and I think the situation at least gives enough uncertainty that it's worth investing in at this point to see like what the potential upside is. Dwayne already noted, like, without having the tush push like in front of him, like being able to substitute in or being able to work in on short yardage situations was kind of like Swift's bugaboo last season. And that's been the case for the Eagles, like for time in memoriam, at least for in the Jalen Hurts era. So now if he gets that out of like now being a part of Chicago, okay, great. That's point one. Point two, you mentioned Shane Waldron a couple weeks ago in the newsletter. I was looking at some of the schematic changes like for some of these teams and the personnel like changeover and like for coaching specifically, like Shane Waldron, like he has been like more on the back end in terms of like a pass rate over expectation once teams do get into the red zone. Kind of noisy, like smaller samples you do have to work with when you do when you look at like PROE, like once you get in the red zone, like smaller number of plays, like so on and so forth. but at least like last year specifically, -6% passer over expectation once they got into the red zone for the Seahawks. And like, while it's great for Kenneth Walker, Zach Charbonnet, and all of that, I mean, that's when, I mean, you see less for Geno Smith, like Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. Could see the same thing for like for the Bears like this year. And I think that's where some of the optimism and the hype around like Caleb Williams, Adunze, Keenan Allen, like DJ Moore. I mean, everybody's focused on the passing game. But if Shane Waldron, the same guy that Jackson Smith and Jigba was like, oh yeah, good luck, like having that dude as your OC, is now like going to be a part of this Bears offense, like that is something that we do need to take into account. And I think that does give at least some boost to what DeAndre Swift like could be like for the Bears in 2024. The only thing, and like you guys have both talked about it, is the fact that Khalil Herbert is still kicking around on the roster. Roshan Johnson's still kicking around the roster. And not to say that these guys are going to like these like super efficient or are like highly acclaimed running backs, but still like in short yarded situations, I mean, fairly high in terms of being able to like generate first downs, like success rate, like EPA per rush, like in those situations, they could work into like that type of scenario, like and be a part of a rotation with DeAndre Swift. But if Swift is going to be that guy, did get the $14 million guarantee, we do get him in that bell cow role in that same situation with the Bears, more efficient offense with Shane Waldron as the OC. Yeah, like RB22, like he could be that underpriced guy that winds up swinging into the high teens, low RB1, like somewhere in there, just based off of the usage, which I think is definitely in play like for him in 2024.
And even independent of kind of his positional rank, Dwayne, it does seem like he's going in kind of a nice pocket of drafts. If you do find yourself, you already got five wide receivers in the first seven rounds, maybe you dip your toes into the elite QB waters, but by the time you get to Swift, I mean, 45 wide receivers on average are off the board and the top eight quarterbacks and tight ends. So again, man, it just seems like this is really setting up specifically for zero and hero RB builds. Like, what is the big difference between DeAndre Swift and guys like Aaron Jones? You mentioned Rashad White, Ramondre Stevenson going a bit earlier. I think the allure of having Swift and then not even being torn away from all that, being torn away from him by other wide receivers you'd rather draft, that's just, you know, the other side of things that's making it that much better of a pick.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like in the drafts I've done, I find it really hard to not just take one or zero running backs in the first five to six picks. It's just, part of it is the value that's being pushed down the board. There's just so much left that you can go back to. And if you don't take the wide receivers, then you're going to be left out. There's no way where all these wide receivers are going overall in drafts. Let's not talk wide receiver one versus wide receiver 40, just the overall pick of where some of these wide receivers are going and what the expected fantasy points should be for paying off, like going at pick 55 overall. Once you get, you know, into like round four and five, a ton of these wide receivers are not going to pay off for what we're paying for them. But like, I don't know an alternative. Like, and I've been thinking about this and trying to think through what is the way you zig, you know, when other people are zagging, or you zag when they zig, whichever. It's tough because if you do try to wait, all the wide receivers are gone. Like, you really have to nail some wide receivers that you think are late round gems, and you're going to have to be really right on them. Like, you know, if you're swinging on a Jalen Polk, that's a name like that I go after, but like, you know, what are the chances we're really going to hit on Jalen Polk? I like him as a late round dart, but I can't hang like my whole draft strategy on him. Like, we're going to have some other guys that we talk about here in just a little bit that I do like. But like, I don't even have right now a Nico Collins like I had last year, where in that scenario, I could be like, okay, fine. Like, as my wide receiver three or four, I know I can go to Nico. Like, I don't have that, you know, this season. So yeah, I think it's tough to not want to just scoop up all the names like DeAndre Swift. I think he's a great example of why it's best to just wait on running back this year. I think we're going to see more leagues than ever won by people that don't even draft a running back in the first five rounds because the way ADP is working out, at least right now for best ball. That could change as we get closer to the regular season. We start looking at leagues like the FFPC. Obviously, the same thing's going to happen in the NFFC because it's PPR and you got to start three wide receivers plus a flex. So it'll be the same there. So obviously your league format is going to play a role, but right now in best ball, it's honestly, it's hard to fight it. Like, I started thinking through last night, I was laying in bed. That's what I was going to sleep to. This is the weird shit I think of when I'm trying to fall asleep. I'm like, what if you started with three running backs? Who would the three running backs be? Because I started thinking, because I had a draft yesterday where I could have gone CMC, Kyren, and Achan. It all fell to me. And I didn't, because I was like, and I should have, just to be different. But the reason why I didn't, I was like, once I dig this hole, I don't know how to get out of it. Like, I don't even know what I'm doing. I don't know how I'm going to attack it. So I started coming up, trying to come up with a list of the names that I would just be willing to reach for at ADP, like to keep on piling on the wide receiver. So maybe that's a topic for another day, but it's just really tough to do because of the way drafts are unfolding.
I've started running back on DraftKings a few times when I got Breece in round one and then Bijan somehow fell to round two. So I was okay to do that. I've had a couple builds where I've gotten ETN and then Joe Mixon in like the round four and five turn. So I was a little lenient to do that. But otherwise, Dwayne, I'm with you where the times that I do kind of make it to round seven and round eight and I only have three wide receivers, it's problematic, man. I like Jameson Williams. I like Rashid Shaheed. I like him as my wide receiver five, my wide receiver six, not my three or four out there. So, don't exactly have that Nico Collins, you know, ace up our sleeve just yet. And also, let's not pretend like, you know, there's necessarily going to be a Nico Collins every single year in the first place. So, good for us on 2023. But, yeah, certainly still trying to, you know, get those stars aligning here in 2024. So, let's do one more running back, guys, and we'll kind of run through some wide receivers. But this is a special one. It is our DraftKings special underpriced, overpriced, or properly priced pick. Again, invite you guys, use that promo code questions, $5 anytime bet gets you 150. So again, appreciate you guys over at DraftKings. But yeah, guys, Devin Singletary, Giants RB1, currently going off the board as the RB35, pick 114.5. Every year, guys, I try to go through and look at the projections and basically try to figure out who are the cheapest potential workhorse running backs in fantasy football. And again, based on the ADP, based on Dwayne's handy-dandy projections, only two running backs are being, you know, drafted outside the top 10 rounds and are expected to see 230-plus combined carries and targets. One is Ezekiel Elliott, whose price continues to rise as people, again, now realize he is likely to be the Cowboys' leader in touches. And two, Devin Singletary. So, Dwayne, I mean, as much as people want to say Devin Singletary is boring and just a guy, Giants sure seem like they didn't exactly pay him to be just a guy. And, I mean, if we go back all the way to, when was it? Oh, yeah. The second half of literally last season, Singletary was kind of giving us some consistent RB1 production. Why? Because of that sweet, sweet volume. So thoughts on Singletary, Dwayne, because again, if we are concluding that really want to get our 5-6 wide receivers inside the top 8 rounds, sure seems like Singletary should be someone that, again, if we don't think is underpriced at a minimum, we should be attacking at his properly priced target here as a borderline RB3.
Yeah, and I was conservative with Singletary because, like, if you look at the last 3 years, the average running back one on an NFL depth chart, not fantasy running back one, the top guy on an NFL depth chart gets 57% of the rushing attempts. So typically, like, my process starts off automated, right? It's using this historical kind of league information to help balance things out, and then it looks at the player themselves. Well, Singletary, over the last 2 years, he's handled 51%, you know, of his team's attempts. Last year, he was 52%. You obviously mentioned a stretch at the end of the year, you know, Ian, where he proved it could be much more than that. He also proved that in Buffalo when they finally would just be like, fine, we're just going to give you the ball, Singletary. Like, he did hold up to it, and he was a guy that could handle more work. So he could have easily been a guy you project for 57, 58, 59, 60% of the rushing attempts. I held him down. I kept him at 52%. In the model, you know, and I even gave Tyrone Tracy Jr. a little bit of work here, right? I gave him 25% of the rushing attempts, but I mean, it's just like, it's the depth chart, man. It's, I know Devin Singletary is not great, but Gary Brightwell, like Eric Gray, I mean, Eric Gray, like, come on,
that Tyrone guy's
Tracy,
dead.
We're forcing Tyrone Tracy. Let's be honest. Like, he has some things in his analytical profile that are nice. Like, he is a guy that could come in and steal some passing down work. So I'm not saying don't take Tyrone Tracy. I love throwing late round darts on him. This is a really good chance. Like, he's nothing. He's a round five rookie draft pick. So this could all be Singletary. Yeah. So, like, looking at Singletary, he's going way later than what his projection says, even though I was conservative. Like, that's the big point that I was trying to make. Now, the flip side to it is when you look at a guy like Singletary and you look at the Giants offense and you look at Daniel Jones, and then you look again at Daniel Jones, and then one more time, you glance at Daniel Jones, and you're like, okay, you added Malik Nabers, but what else is there? Like, the ceiling is not super high for this offense, so, like, he's going to be just 100% dependent. He really needs all that volume to come his way. And the problem I have with Singletary is I struggle to find that scenario where I'm like, oh, my God, I missed out on a league winner. right? Whereas a guy like Chase Brown going around him that I don't even project for as much work because I got to split that up more with Zach Moss. But with how explosive Chase Brown is playing for Chris's beloved Bengals, if he suddenly did take over the lead role, holy crap, like I could see him being a guy that could help me win my league. Zach Moss, even if he just gets the workload that he had last year, you know, before Jonathan Taylor came back, well, even once Jonathan Taylor came back, he held on to that a little longer than we all thought he could. Like, he could end up being a guy that really breaks fantasy, right? Even Austin Eckler, as old as he is, like he had a high ankle sprain last year. He's facing Brian Robinson Jr., who's not even that good. Like, what if Eckler suddenly is in an every down role and he has that pass? Like, I could see an angle where I get more excited about, like, at least they drafted Jaden Daniels, you know, and they're trying some new things. So that's my problem with Singletary. Where I like him is if, like, let's say you really did wait, like we're talking about at running back, and let's say you grabbed DeAndre Swift was your first running back off the board, and you know that in rounds of like 11, 12, and 13, you're going to just start jamming in the Jalen Wrights. You're going to be going after the Marshawn Lloyds, the Blake Corums, all those guys that could give you the upside if the starter goes down. But you just need one other name that you're like, I just need a dude to get me through 8 games that I think is going to be on the field, and I don't take zilch. Then I like Singletary. But if I'm swinging for upside in those rounds, I do struggle to click on his name. So he's one of these that, like, when I saw the show sheet and the topic for today, is he too high? Is he too low? Like, I can give you a different answer for, like, every kind of roster build you have. Just against projections, he's ranked too low. But depending on how your build is, I could say you don't want him. But on another build, I could say he's a great running back, too, for your team, depending on how you're trying to, you know, finish out your roster.
Yeah. I think you're wrong, man. I think we got to get all the Singletary. All right.
Well, hey,
How about that? All right. Look, when we do go through this, yes, Daniel Jones, not ideal, but you know, we also had Tommy DeVito and Tyrod Taylor last year, and Saquon Barkley suffered a high ankle. And that was the one where it was, you know, a low, but then maybe it's a little bit higher than low ankle sprain. So they kept playing us with that. But through that all, like, Saquon was not good last year. He really wasn't. I'm not saying it's all his fault. He still finished as a top 10 running back in fantasy points per game. And then you look at the career numbers between them. Yes, Saquon demands more attention. Who's the better running back? It's Saquon Barkley. But you also look at yards per carry, yards after contact, missed tackles forced, explosive run play rate. Surely Barkley's better at any of these things, or at least some of them, than Singletary for their career. No, he hasn't been. So, yes, I do think playing on the Bills and the Texans last year is certainly better than the Giants, but you start grinding some of those, you know, PFF run blocking, yards before contact, the best tools we do have of measuring those in, you know, run blocking environments, and it's a lot closer than you think. So, he got 3 years, $16.5 million, more guaranteed money than Derrick Henry. Brian Daboll was obviously his OC back in those Buffalo days. I mean, Chris, yes, Tyrone Tracy has some fun stuff, but we're also looking at like 100 freaking carry sample size for a dude that, you know, played running back for 1 year at Purdue, okay? He's also a late fifth round rookie who is 24 freaking years old already, so I don't want to completely understate it because, hey, Lord knows I've wasted enough of your guys' time over the year on Antonio Gibson. I love me an athletic, explosive, wide receiver, converted running back as much as the next fantasy nerd.
Who doesn't?
But Chris, it does seem like, again, similar to what we're talking about with DeAndre Swift, man, I just think Singletary, we could look up after week one and be like, holy shit, this dude just played 80% of the offensive snaps. And yes, the Giants suck, but 20 touches a week go a long way in fantasy land, and I think that is on the table for Singletary.
Ladies and gentlemen, what you're listening to right now is the exact same conversation we're going to be having at Ian's wedding next weekend. I can tell you this right now. No, I think you're right in the sense that we're like looking at Singletary as the lead back is the right way to approach it. Like whether from contract, because we're using the same like contract argument for a guy like DeAndre Swift. Obviously, like the not the same guaranteed numbers, but still we were using a similar argument for DeAndre Swift. But I think that's fair. I'll also bring up a completely out of left field data point in that if you want to go back, like take a look at like Kenneth Walker. And like, you'll see why I'm bringing up Kenneth Walker in just a second. Kenneth Walker's like highest scrimmage yard output, like single game scrimmage yard output was like 112 yards or something like that in the same week that Drew Lock started. So it's like, we get some Drew Lock starts like for the Giants, like this season, like, hey, like, let's see what we can do with Devin Singletary. But no, I'm with you. Like from week 9 on, top 10 in both like touches per game. And then also touch per game, explosive run rate. And he also was earning targets like on an offense that like we thought was like whether it was CJ Stroud or even in the weeks that it was like Case Keenum starting, like we actually got like some good output like from Devin Singletary. So I'm with you, man. But I would say though, Dwayne Brod did bring up like an interesting point where if you do go the, let's say the hero RB route, and you are relying more on the Travis Etienne's, Isaiah Pacheco's, the Saquon Barkley's, the DeAndre Swift's of the world, like as your core, like for the running back position, tacking on a Devin Singletary, like, isn't like the worst way to want, like, to round out your draft. But
yeah, you need to mix it up. Like four guys and ceiling guys.
Exactly.
I don't think you're going to lose your league by not drafting Singletary. Yeah. I also don't think you're going to lose your league by taking him, right? He could still serve. Like, I think he could be a very viable source of points for you early in your fantasy season while you wait on James Conner to go down so Trey Benson can go off.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's where roster construction and even diving into like the nitty-gritty, like who else is on your roster right now? And if you are swinging for upside, if you do just go true zero RB and you want to try and find that guy that if Singletary goes down or if the offense is just completely horrific for the Giants and they do need a guy that is more up-tempo, can provide more speed, can be in the passing game, and that speaks more to Tyrone Tracy, then okay, fine. Then that's the run out you would need in order to hit on a guy that you would take in the 17th, 18th round or wherever like Tracy's ADP winds up shaping up. Yeah. But right now on May 9th, if I were to try and at least hit on like one of those two and like say the guy that who's going to get the most projected touches in that offense, regardless of what I think the efficiency of that overall offense is going to be, yeah, I have to lean Singletary. And I would say he's underpriced right now.
And also, to be clear, I don't want to be completely out on Tracy because he's going in round 17, all right? Yeah. So, yeah, he's fine, but he's also going round 17, so it's kind of hard to be that critical of anything but happening.
To your point, Ian, like, you could make an argument that Singletary should be going in the same range as Javonte Williams.
Yeah.
You could say Najee Harris even. You could say Raheem Mostert. Like, Mostert,
he's a dead zone running back, but he's not, you don't have to draft him in the dead zone.
Right.
So now he's alive again.
There's no such thing as a dead zone running back anymore. I guess unless we're just shifting everything. I saw a tweet the other day from Eric Beim4, which I thought was pretty good. Like, and it was like, hey, you know, the dead zone is still there, right? It's just all shifted down. So if you want to be a zero running back drafter, like, just keep, basically, essentially, you just keep pushing those guys down further. But my thought was like, no, I don't even have to anymore. Now I can take all the wide receivers and take the guys that, you know, were in the dead zone that are not in the dead zone. So by virtue of that, like, is it really a dead zone anymore? Like, not I don't really. Know. Like, the definition of a dead zone running back is what matters more to me, right? A running back that's barely hanging on to the volume that they have. You look at their efficiency, they probably shouldn't have it. They're not a high-end target earner, which is the big concern with Devin Singletary. He's not a target earner, like, at all. Never has been in his career. Last year, 13% targets per route run, but Daniel Jones is very willing to check it down. So, like, when I look at the dead zone guys, I'm more so trying to avoid a certain archetype of guy. Yeah. And so I would say Devin Singletary fits that. But to your point, again, Ian, like, you're getting him at pick 114 right now. Like, that's there's nothing wrong with clicking on Devin Singletary at that price.
No.
The dead zone trap was these mediocre talents and
Davis was the best one ever.
What was he going, like, round four, round five? That was a problem. But
or
now
old Mark Ingram.
These guys perfectly fit the bill, but Aaron Jones, Ramondre Stevenson, Zamir White, Najee Harris, like, these are guys who were not, you know, completely sold on the offenses. We can talk about how good they are relative to average running backs, but we're mostly drafting them because we think they're going to be the lead RB1 and have enough volume. I mean, Jones is going pick 71. I mean, not that many years ago, he's probably going round three, round four, where it would be a problem, but times have changed. And yeah, guess what? Singletary, not even going with those guys. So I am a big fan. Fellas, we have some wide receivers and tight ends here as well. Now let's try to actually go rapid fire. And yeah, I'm the one to blame.
You have to hold us to it.
Yeah.
A little bit long-winded, but I am going to hold you to it. So again, with, trying to get through these, Nico Collins, wide receiver 15, pick 22.3, end of round two. Although that is on its way down with Stephon Diggs, obviously now being the potential new wide receiver one in Houston. So Dwayne, obviously very crowded offense, but we do expect there to be plenty of passing production. Nico Collins, properly priced, underpriced, overpriced. How you feeling?
And I think he's overpriced. And I hate to say that because I feel like I'm the Nico truther. I really love him. as a player, but we're talking about a guy last year, they would never even get to a 90% route participation. They would keep him around 70, 75%. They're rotating their guys. Bobby Slowick is back, so that's probably going to continue because we have Stephon Diggs now in the mix, and we still have Tank Dell. So I worry that we're really forecasting Nico to like the top end of his outcomes. And let me ask you this, guys, like Girl Scout sauntering to the door, you've got to put your mortgage on it. Okay. You got one bet. You can't decline the bet. You have to choose a side. Who's getting more targets for the Texans offense, Nico Collins or Stephon Diggs? I think if I was forced to make that decision, I would tell you Stephon Diggs. And I love Nico.
Girl Scout is that? Like what's going on?
Oh,
here?
She's violent. She's very violent. Man, she carries a switchblade. Yeah. We'll have to get you in on it. You don't want to be part of it.
What's going on?
It was supposed to be a more PC version of gun to a head, but now it's gotten even darker somehow.
Yeah, I know.
Honestly.
She must know jujitsu or something like that. Like,
Dwayne, I'd like to say Nico, but you know, Nico and Tank played 7 games together where they were at least at 50% of the snaps, and they each had exactly 52 targets. I mean, at a minimum, mm-hmm. Chris, if it's Nico, if it's Diggs, I don't think it's going to be that big of a gap.
Diggs still had a 30% target share last year. I get that he faded in the second half of the year, but Jesus, like this dude was still earning targets.
But yeah.
My point is it's not even those two. Tank's not going to be that far behind either.
No, and actually in those same games where Tank was healthy, like Tank had like the greater air yard share like than Nico. So it's just like, I'm with Dwayne. Like, I think he's overpriced at this point without even getting into the Stephon Diggs of it all. Or if you want to factor in like whatever Dalton Schultz is good, like any of those other target earners. But like, if you're just looking straight at the wide receivers, like I'm hard pressed to believe that Nico is going to be the one to outshine the three of them. I just don't see it.
Yeah. I think if you have to pick, Diggs leads this offense in targets. Like it's just done it for too long, man.
Yeah,
it's hard.
I think Nico could outproduce him on a few fewer targets, yeah. But again, they could argue
they're pure fantasy points. I think they're all in it really close. Like, mm-hmm. It's man, Diggs really
three offenses have produced three top 24 wide receivers in the same season since 2013. 2013 Broncos, Decker, DT, and Wes Welker. 2018 Rams, Cooper Kupp, Bobby Trees, and Brandon Cooks. And your 2020 Bucks, Evans, Goblin, and AB. So, hey, if CJ Stroud reaches that ceiling that we did see for flashes, certainly possible. But, yeah, going to be tough. Another wide receiver, Baltimore Ravens wide receiver 1, Zay Flowers, currently going off the board as a wide receiver 25, pick 41. Dwayne, there were some murmurs earlier in the offseason, not even murmurs, like he was, I believe, being investigated for a domestic violence-related charge. That has been cleared up, so I know his ADP was lowering for a little bit because of that uncertainty. We are fully not expecting a suspension of any sorts for Zay Flowers as we record this right now. So, of course, wide receiver 1 in Baltimore usually ends up being the number 2 pass game option behind Mark Andrews. And sure enough, with Andrews healthy from weeks 2 through 10, he did lead the team with 58 targets, but Zay Flowers right behind him at 56. So thoughts on Flowers, Dwayne, at wide receiver 25.
I think it's priced right. You know, I mean, this is a guy that I know he never truly broke out and just went bonkers last year, but it was a really good rookie season. Typically guys that come in and do what he did, a 24% target share as a rookie, man. Like, come on. That's really good. Like 1.64 yards per route run. That gets people a little bit more concerned. A lot of his stuff was around the line of scrimmage, 8.8 ADOT, 23% air yard share. So like there's some things there, but overall, like I just look at it. It was a rookie, came in as played as well as he did. I'm expecting another step forward. So I like Zay Flowers as a high end wide receiver 3. That's where he projects as well as a wide receiver 26 in our projection model. So like everything aligns for me is Zay Flowers. I think that he's priced really well. I think you're getting upside from where you take him, and I don't think there's a ton of downside.
6 touchdowns in his last 7 games of last season, and that's not even including that horrific offensive holding call on OBJ that nullified that like 65-yard touchdown, I believe, against your Bengals, Chris. So wide receiver 25, pick 41. Personally, I think the pick 41 part in underdog is my only issue. Chris, I'm okay with his standing relative to the other wide receivers at a minimum.
Yeah, and I think so. And like a couple of things that I noted over the past like week or so. Did you guys see yesterday that the Eric DaCosta, GM for the Ravens, said they were interested in getting Ricky Pearsall? Like they actually had him like fairly highly ranked, like, and they thought that the 49ers taking him was a good pick, which I thought was interesting in the fact that like Zay Flowers, when he was coming out of college, Matt Harmon over at Reception Perception always does excellent work, but part of his profile was highlighting like Flowers is like route success, like on like digs and like outbreaking routes and like working like the intermediate parts of the field. And if they wanted a guy like Parasol, I wonder if they try and use Flowers like a bit more. Cause I know that like when he first came out, a lot of the first couple of weeks, it was like the first week where he wound up playing my Bengals and he had like a couple of deep shots downfield. I wonder if that's the type of move they want to try and work in for Flowers, like in his second season. They bring in Tez Walker, more of a boundary, like deep threat, have him and Nelson Aguilar playing like that sort of role, and having a guy like Flowers who can be like that, more of that intermediate target, actually does have a fairly savvy as a route runner. I do think that that gives him at least a bit more of a, not say a floor, but at least like a little bit more upside for this year versus how he was playing like in 2023. But to Dwayne's point, like it was just him and Puka Nacua were the only two rookies with over a 20% target share. So a lot of like a lot of good things working for him in his rookie season. Just like to see him work a bit more with Lamar Jackson and like carrying on into his second year.
Let's double those 8 rush attempts as well. I mean, come on, give me a little bit more than that. But 5 games with double digit targets last year. 2021 Hollywood Brown had 7 such games. No other Ravens wide receiver has had more than 1 such game since Lamar Jackson took over in 2019. So clearly they do feel differently about him. And yeah, I think he showed enough to be in on that cost again, especially on sites that aren't going to be firing wide receivers off the board quite as quickly as our friends over at Underdog. So 2 more fellas, Chiefs wide receiver 1, maybe at this point, not looking great for Rashee Rice. So Marquise Brown, wide receiver 35, pick 62.9. How do you feel on this, Dwayne? Because I started writing about this and I see kind of the bull case. I mean, he was, first of all, very banged up last year. Scott Barrett had a really good stat where only Aaron Jones spent more total games on the injury report listed as questionable than Marquise Brown. So even when he was out there, didn't really look like the same guy. We can go back to 2022 in those first 6 weeks when he was the wide receiver 5 overall to find, you know, the potential, you know, best case upside here. But part of me, Dwayne, is just worried that Marquise Brown, a bit of a, you know, overqualified version of that MVS role in this Chiefs offense. I do wonder if Xavier Worthy is actually the guy that's going to eat more of the underneath stuff that Rashee Rice was living on. So what say you, Dwayne? Marquise Brown, plenty affordable though as a borderline wide receiver 3, I will say.
No, I think he's a great pick where you're getting him, like, because he is a guy that's shown he can attack every single area of the field. He can play from the outside. So he really does require the least amount of scheming from the wide receiver standpoint. Rashee Rice, you know, if he's back, a lot of schemed looks. Xavier Worthy, you know, beating press man, like, is that going to be a difficulty for him at the next level? You know, Matt Harmon talked about that in reception perception. So he's going to have to prove. That means you're going to have to move him around and do some interesting things, where Marquise Brown's the one guy you can line up and just tell him to go win at every level of the field. You know, he's been over a 20% targets per route run every single season of his career, something that we've never seen MVS do or even come anywhere close to. So I don't think the two are anywhere close to being the same player. And I think that Brown is so good, like, he's just going to unlock all the different areas of the field. And he's going to get plenty of targets. You could easily see him be the wide receiver 1, you know, on the team. I think it's in the range of outcomes. I still love Xavier Worthy. I want access to both of these guys. I've still been taking Rashee Rice because he just continues to fall down the board. But obviously, like, after each passing day, like, I get a little bit more nervous about it, even though Rashee Rice is becoming more and more cost effective because of that news. But yeah, man, I really like Marquise Brown. I guess the one potential risk is that they slot him into just being a guy that runs down the field, but I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to, I mean, Tyreek Hill lined up out wide all the time and played all levels of the field. Not saying Marquise Brown is Tyreek Hill, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if Marquise Brown is the leading wide receiver. He's proven he can do this. Xavier Worthy still has to prove it. So both guys are going around the same range of the draft. I like getting exposure to both of them. And man, if you want to go out and you want to create a monster stack for Patrick Mahomes, you should draft right now. Cause you could take Travis Kelce at the end of round 3. You can turn around, you can take Patrick Mahomes at the beginning of round 4, and then coming back at the round 5-6 turn, you can get Xavier Worthy and Marquise Brown, and you can just be sitting there. And if Rashee Rice does for some reason miss like half the season, you're going to be pretty happy with all of that.
Yeah. Wide receivers going immediately after Brown right now: Rome Odunze, Calvin Ridley, Jordan Addison, and Ladd McConkey. So yeah, I mean, Chris, there are some concerns here, but at wide receiver 35, it seems like at a minimum, the price is right. I can see us maybe having a different conversation if this is a borderline wide receiver 2 here in a month, but you feeling underpriced as well, Chris?
Yeah, underpriced for sure. And like, in not just relative to the other guys that you named that are coming, like are in the same range as him, but even just within that offense. Do we really expect, I mean, like as to what Dwayne was mentioning, Xavier Worthy to really come in like in week one, like right out of the gate, just like earning targets, given his size and like what could potentially be what might take a little bit of on-ramping for Reed to figure out, like, how do you get him involved? Like, how do we scheme him up so that he is, you know, capable of like getting those targets, being able to utilize his speed like a bit more. But like Marquise Brown, just put him out there, like maybe put him as the Z or something like that, and then just let him work and let him do his thing. So no, I don't have much of a problem with him. And also, to what Dwayne was saying earlier, the fact that you can stack him like fairly easily with Patrick Mahomes and some of the other guys, if you still want to take shots on Rashee Rice, you still want to grab Travis Kelce. I mean, all the guys that like most of the Kansas City pass catchers are coming at such an affordable price right now that, yeah, I think Marquise Brown is honestly like fairly like underpriced, like relative to what he can be in this offense.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm ready to freaking draft. And that's what I'm going to go do actually right now. So, Dwayne, good luck, you know, continuing to have your kids not bother you as you continue to grind through some underdog goodness. Chris, you know, I'm just happy we're in a state, the great state of Ohio, where we can do pretty much whatever we want, all things fantasy and gambling these days. Pick'ems would be cool, though. Get that shit together.
Pick'ems would be nice. Letters,
please, yeah. That would be nice. But appreciate you guys tuning in. As always, this has been a fun time. So for producer James, for Dwayne, for Chris, I'm Ian. Thanks again for tuning in to the Fantasy Life Podcast. Until next time, take care. Goodbye.